You're listening to Past and Present, the Colonial Williamsburg podcast. Hi, welcome to the podcast. I'm Harmony Hunter. 9 miles from where we are here in Colonial Williamsburg sits Jamestown Island. It's the site where English colonists landed in 1607. Jamestown is America's first English colony that stuck, and it was on this little island that we are introduced to one of history's most romanticized and well-known figures, Pocahontas. My guest today is Bill Kelso, Director of Archaeology at Historic Jamestown, and his ongoing excavations at the site have uncovered the site of the church where Pocahontas was married to John Rolfe in 1614. Bill, thank you for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Well, tell us about this church that you've uncovered.
Well, we, during the summer, have an archaeological field school, and we have a number of students that come from all over the country, and we decided to excavate an area in almost corner of the fort, all more towards the center, to see if we could determine where public buildings were. And one of the sites that we haven't found within this triangular fort was the site of the earliest churches. There are records that are out there about it, besides one that said it was in the midst of the fort, we didn't know exactly where it was. And the field school uncovered an area where we began to see the signs of where a wooden building had stood, but a really well-built, substantial wooden building this time, because what we found were these gigantic holes that had been dug in the ground, and upright timbers or columns of timber were placed inside them, and the dirt packed around it. So it was, we began to see a pattern of these holes, and it became clear that it began to match some of the dimensions that were given of a church that was built in 1608.
I want to understand this church as a part of the fort at Jamestown. Tell us more about how this church is a part of the plan for the fort and a part of the ideals of the colonists.
Well, the Church of England, of course, was the official church of Britain, and the Virginia Company, the commercial company that sponsored the attempt to colonize, and finally it became Jamestown, instructed the colonists to have the church as the real heart of the community, and that one of the other objectives was to convert the Powhatan Indians to Christianity. So the church both served the colonists and also their plans to include the Powhatan Indian community in this endeavor. But in one particular directive really impressed me, and it said that no matter what you do, you can find gold, you do all these things that you know that would make us wealthy, but if you don't have the church at the center of your community, it's going to fail.
You've been doing excavations on Jamestown Fort and systematically uncovering the whole fort site there for years. Did you know what you were going to find when you discovered the church? Did you have a good sense that in that area should be the footings of that early church?
No, it was a big surprise, because we had found another set of post holes, it turned out to be just one side of a building, and the other half had washed away into the river at the corner of the fort. And it looked like a really substantial building, and we even found some plaster in the post holes, which we thought would come from the walls. And the church was described as very light inside by one record. So, and 34 graves were in that area. So we thought we probably had the church, but there was just this one other blank area that we needed to look in. And I've always said, unless we can find a better candidate, we already had the church. But we did find a really good candidate, you know, the real thing.
So let's see. You're doing this summer's excavation. You're just uncovering a different part of the fort. You have discovered the site of this early church, which was a surprise. How did you know that it was the church? What told you that it was the church?
Well, the first piece of evidence was the distance between these marks that were left from where the post rotted out, as you mentioned. And going again to the record, it's a kind of what we do in historical archaeology is a constant interplay between what we find in the soil and what's written in the records. And you keep one, it raises a question, and you go back and look at it. Well, the one description of the church that was standing by 1610, which another record said was built in 1608, said it was 24 feet wide and 60 feet long. So we were finding, we found first two posts, and it was 12 feet between the marks. So that was pretty good, you know, 2 times 12 is 24. So then we went further on down the line, and it was just like connecting dots from that point. Once we found out that we had the end of the building, and it only went 24 feet, then we did a right angle and began to check to the west, as it turned out. And then we began to also find 12-foot center posts. So now we have, I think, seven or eight. We're not finished. This is only only half uncovered at this point. But that would, you know, 5 times 12 is 60. So I just am absolutely positive. And then the clincher was when we were digging on the east end, which would be the chancel in a Church of England, Anglican church. And this would be where important people would be buried, in the actual chancel. That's where the altar is, and it's the east end. So in the first 12 feet, we found 4 burial impressions, or dirt, different colors of dirt. We haven't excavated to actual remains, but they're basically 2 by 6 and lined right up in the center of that, across the end of the chancel, the east end. And that was, I mean, this is it. I mean, there's no question about that.
Actual remains, if you're able to excavate that, that in itself gives you a wealth of information.
Yeah, I think we're planning to test the chancel burials. And we even have some candidates for who they might be.
Who do you think they might be?
Well, there was a knight that died, a knight by the name of Sir Ferdinando Wenman was one. And he was sort of the right-hand man of Lord Delaware, who was the first resident governor. And there are two captains, Captain Peter Wynne, Captain Gabriel Archer, and Archer left some journals, which were very interesting, of his eyewitness account of him at Jamestown before he died. And he died in 1610, and so did Wenman and Wynne. They all died during that year. So they'd be buried there. And then in 1608, it's possible that the first rector of the church was named Reverend Robert Hunt, died about the time this church was being built in 1608, it appears. So he could have been buried in it as well. When there's 4, it could be those 4 people.
How wonderful to think you might be about to meet these people you've read so much about and so much from.
Right, yeah, and it does. And that occurrence, when you begin to see remains of people that you've read about and you have some biographies on, it's a powerful way of accessing history, and really gives you a third dimension, a reality sense to you. You can experience it again in a way.
We talked about another prominent historical figure who has a history in this church, and that's Pocahontas. If you found the 1608 church, then it stands to reason that this is the church where she would have been married to John Rolfe.
Exactly, and you can walk and stand in the exact spot, I think, because now we know. She was married in 1614, but the church was still standing, I think, and at Jamestown. The ceremony would have been in front of at the edge of the chancel, in the middle. And that's just tradition. And that spot is there. It's kind of fun to stand there.
Even before their marriage, Pocahontas was a very important emissary between the native population and the colonial ones. She helped bring them gifts of food. She helped sort of act as an ambassador between the two cultures.
Yeah, and she, there's a little tragedy here, I think, because she became a girl of no country. You know, the Indians kind of said, okay, you're helping the English, and the English were looking at her as an Indian. You know, so she had a little problem with all that. But she did convert to Christianity, had a new name, Rebecca, and I think was very taken up by England.
One of my favorite things about Jamestown Island and its history is that you can go there now. Today you can stand, walk in the footsteps of those first settlers, look across the same river, walk on the same ground. Tell folks where they can come see this excavation happening, where they can find these sites.
Well, beginning in this year, we're out for the season until the 1st of April. So the excavations are open. They're going 5 days a week now. And we have an archaeologist gives a tour every day at 11. That's become very popular. And visitors can come right up to the edge of the excavation and see what's going on. And that's very rare to be that public.
And beyond the actual excavation and process, there's a wonderful collection that houses artifacts and all kinds of research that from objects that you found on the site, the Archaearium, people can visit.
Right. The Archaearium has over 1,000 artifacts that are interpretive, and it tells the story both in the words of the colonists and in the things that they left in the ground.
That's wonderful. Bill, thank you so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure.
To support the podcast and Colonial Williamsburg programs, visit history.org/donate. We love hearing from you. Visit history.org/podcasts and click comment at the top of the page to drop us a line.